In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my hat and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to another episode of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. He's John Senecal. I am Brian Shackman. Those of you watching on YouTube, take a good long look at this.
Tom is going to leave the building.
My mustache is my welcome to radio. You know, I no longer work in TV. I have a full-time radio job, so I decided in celebration, in honor of it, to grow a mustache. And my wife has basically said she's not getting close to me until I shave it.
TV is usually where the mustache is, not radio. You got to grow your hair out.
Well, but in 2021, I don't see many TV dudes with mustaches.
Well, I'd say Jerry Brooks, but he shaved
and he hung them up. He hung up the microphone. But anyway, the mustache will be gone in a couple days, and I'm just reveling in it. It's not long enough to get food caught in it yet, which I'm kind of bummed about. But anyway, let's talk about baseball. Yankees
Speaking Red of coming Sox. Up soon.
Yes, we have spring training. So the Yankees report on Wednesday, February 17th. The Red Sox report on Thursday, February 18th. And full squad for
on
everybody
time.
Is February 22nd. Slated to start the Major League Baseball season on April 1st. The question I have for you, John, is, I mean, my mindset isn't even close to being ready for baseball. And so I'm wondering, are you excited? Have you thought about it? Like, where is your head?
Obviously, I'm excited that they're talking a full season. It should happen. And the spring training is going to start on time. It took a while for the free agent dominoes to fall. So
right. And they haven't all fallen. But
not totally, but the big fish are all pretty much gone. And, you know, that usually signals that it's time to get going. And
right.
It's great. You know, coming on the back end of the pandemic, hopefully. And there's going to be a lot of protocols in place for spring training, quarantining before you get there.
What do you think of the tracker?
If you read the message blogs and everything, people will say, you know, that's the beginning of the government oversight and all that. But, I mean, let's look at it in the grand scheme of things. Government oversight would be more like them tracking you and I and everyone, not Major League Baseball. You could easily pretty much track Major League Baseball players as it is. There's a pretty finite group of them.
Right.
You know, I really wouldn't worry too much about that. Obviously, the players union isn't really too concerned about it either.
Well, listen, it's for one reason and one reason only, so people don't stray and get exposed. We're in Florida, which is the most laissez-faire state when it comes to COVID, so they just want to make
it's
sure nobody gets
that
sick.
That they're going to do it in Arizona, too, because that's a bad spot now, too, and there was actually talk that it wasn't going to happen. They were pushing back at first.
And you can't bubble baseball. It's just too many players, and there's too many variables, and it's too expensive. And the thing is that all it takes, the NHL right now, there's half a dozen teams in the NHL that are shut down for a short term. So it doesn't take much to screw up a season. And if you're actually going to try to play 162, you can't have game postponements
because
there's no way to backfill it, right? So then you're going to end up with teams competing for playoff spots that have played a couple fewer games, and it could be a disaster. And this is why I would just say this. The season should not have started on time. And they should have found a way to be able to, in a socially acceptable way, get these players vaccinated so you can play the right way. Because you can't really guarantee player safety until they're vaccinated.
Or what if they did something on the back end where, you know, they went into if they had to, you know, the back end of the season, go into a bubble situation. Or maybe they didn't have to, you know, given the time, the playout come October. You know, maybe you could play. You know, weather-wise, you could play in a dome stadium and do a neutral
site.
But
then there's no home field, and then you could.
There wasn't last year either.
Right, but I don't think it was a legit season. I don't think it was a legit. Even though the Dodgers are the best team.
But now we're talking legit schematics. We're not talking numbers of games. We're talking, like, legit, you know, fan base. And,
right, but all the World Series are home and home and home. You know, like, to me, like, if it's neutral site, then it sort of negates it. And I guess
my point. It's a nostalgia thing. Baseball is a number and nostalgia.
Right, and I just think baseball is setting themselves up for a potential problem because if they can't get all the games in or something happens, there's just a couple of months. It's bad luck for baseball because we're just a couple of months away from having a situation where we're all going to, this could be vaccinations enough where we can go back to the ballpark. But
right. There's
this April and May and potentially June where it's not going to be the case.
Yeah, you don't want to push the envelope either.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm not cheering for the season to be a disaster. I'm just saying the reason why they're so strict about these protocols right now is that they know what's at stake in these first couple months, because if a couple teams have to shut down, it's going to be really, really difficult.
And they also, I mean, we all know the owners want the fans back. They want everything to go as smooth as possible. And they're making the players happy by getting them into the park early, on time. Right. But in the grand scheme of things, they just want fans back in the stands.
Right. And I think, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this that much, but I think all sports have realized, and I hope the athletes appreciate the importance of fans. I think that it's become a reality now. They understand how much they feed off of the fans. I think baseball is one sport that doesn't really pay a lot of respect to fans.
It's like they've always said it's about the fans, but it hasn't been about the fans.
No, and the players, a lot of them don't give a crap. And the distance, as I've said this many times, the distance between a player and fan has gotten greater as the money's gotten bigger.
Oh, it's crazy. The ballparks, it's like sometimes you feel like you paid $250 for a seat and you're... It's like you're at a minor league game in the upper deck.
Yeah, it's totally true. And so I don't know. I mean, do you think, if I was going to give an over-under before we move on to other things, when do you think you will be able to go to Yankee Stadium to see a game?
If we talk specifically Yankee Stadium, I would say after the All-Star break.
So July.
Sometime in July. But we're also talking Yankee Stadium. Like, you know, I think they'll be a little bit ahead of the curve, but I think they'll be conservative at the same time.
Whereas, like, Florida...
They might just say hell with it.
Just let them in.
Texas, like they did last year. You know, California maybe. You know, I don't know. California is a whole different ball of wax. But, like, what you're saying, yes, exactly.
I think Fenway and Yankee Stadium will probably be around the same time then.
That's what I'm guessing. I mean, no expert, no CDC insight. No World Health Organization.
Because if they were like, okay, well, we'll let 2,000 fans in for opening day, but it's going to cost you $250 a ticket.
People will do it.
I won't, though.
No, but people will do it. Absolutely, people will do it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we've seen fans in games during the pandemic. We're currently still in the pandemic. We just watched the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So, you know, it can be done. I was actually kind of surprised that it wasn't done at the end of the season more last year, to be honest with you. I think, you know, some teams that probably could have done it probably said, heck with it, our season is lost anyways. But a team like the Yankees, I think they could have, you know, weaseled their way in and got some fans into the stands.
So he's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest driver in sports. Let's quickly touch on free agents. Then let's quickly touch on Curt Schilling. And then let's talk about the trade that was made. We didn't talk about this before. The trade was made between the Yankees and the Red Sox. And you have some great nuggets for people out there in terms of the history of this stuff. But let's start with free agents. You know, we've had a couple of shoes have dropped. I mean, yep. For me, the only thing that's interesting out there is obviously Jackie Bradley Jr. with the Mets signing a center fielder. That market shut off to him. He doesn't have many options. And so I feel a little bad for JBJ because he wants a good size contract, and I think he's probably going to get less than what he wants to stay in Boston.
It's interesting, though. There's still a lot of money out there. Like, there's still money. The players are getting some interesting deals. Like,
but who's going to pay a 240 hitter who plays a good center field? Who's going to pay him $12 to $15 million a year?
Milwaukee just paid a gold glove second baseman who hits 240 something, $14 million a year.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, when you look at DJ LeMahieu's contract that he signed, like, Cashman has got to be sitting back like Mr. Scrooge.
Right.
Like, it's insane that that guy is getting $15 million a year when these other players, I mean, they're all getting good money still.
Right.
Some of them are getting less, but there is lots of money out there. I mean, Bauer just signed, what, was $45 million he's going to make the first year?
Yeah, his AAV is something like that.
It's insane. And it's funny because in one of our episodes, like four or five episodes ago, I just kind of threw out there Bauer was going to sign a one-year deal with the Yankees for $45
million right
at the end. And he wound up signing a three-year deal with the Dodgers, basically an out clause every year. But it's 45 the first year, I believe, and 44 the second, and then whatever that round.
So who's left? There's JBJ. You said just off camera, you said Justin Turner, and there was one other good
Kevin
name.
Millar. Kevin Pillar.
That's funny. You know, it just real quickly before we get into Schilling, I mean, with the Dodgers getting Bauer, it seems like there's like two or three teams that are trying and everybody else is not.
It's amazing because in the NL West, for the last month and a half, we watched the Padres just go crazy.
Right.
Making trades. And they were like, oh my God, the Padres are mean business. All along knowing that the Dodgers are going to be good. They're still good. Right. And then the Dodgers go out and, you know, they get
Listen, the Padres could be the second best team in baseball and be a wild card team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good the Dodgers are. But it's just crazy that they'll go out and spend like that. And listen, Boston and New York
are taking like a $7 million hit on the salary cap. That's nothing. If you think about that, what they got assembled right there, and they're not bringing back Turner as of now.
I think they could win the World Series
for the next 4 years.
They could have done it without Bauer.
You know what I mean? Well, they did do it.
Yeah. So I mean, although I'm very interested to see what the Dodgers are like for 162.
What I'm interested to see, according to when you talk about Bauer, is how is he going to be on a good team? How is his numbers going to look on a good team? We all know that, you know, his win losses aren't great because right. He's been on some pretty crappy teams. He's been on Arizona. He's been on Cleveland. He's been on Cincinnati.
So his win loss may end up being way better than people think.
Right. You know, and he's only had really two good ERA years, 2018 when he was an all-star.
Right.
And then just recently in a shortened season. Great pitcher, high strikeouts. Can he be even better? Is he going to win 20 games like it's nothing?
Plus, he's going to the NL where he has one less decent hitter to face. And
there won't be a DH as of now, so can he hit?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it'll matter if he hits.
Put that on his social media channels.
He'll have some fun with that. There's no doubt about it. Okay, let's talk quickly about Curt Schilling. He did not make the Hall of Fame.
I'm shocked. Are you shocked?
No. I mean, it's one of those things where... Are we supposed to separate out the person from the player and this and that? And
we did. We talked about that once.
And the thing about the steroid stuff is that with the steroid stuff, the guys are trying to sort of they're sorry. They want to sort of rebuild their reputation. This is a different situation where Schilling is basically like, "This is who I am. This is what I believe. That's free speech."
Thumb in his nose.
Yeah, go put a sock in it.
And then he said, "Take my name off the ballot for next year."
Right. So I think this is where his personality and what it's not about politics. It's the way he handles everything that is turning everyone off. And so,
well, Clemens did the same thing when his whole McNamee thing was going down. He came right
that
out.
That was years and years ago. And like he's since been the gun radio. So he doesn't get in people's faces about any of it. He just sort of has faded into oblivion. Where Schilling is like, "This is who I am. This is what I believe." And suck an egg.
It's interesting, like that whole little the circle of guys that were in front of Congress, really the only one that's kind of came out pretty squeaky clean was Mark McGuire. He's still in baseball.
Well, because he's still employed. He accepted responsibility.
Did he, though? He did a little bit. He kind of glazed around it. Later on, he did kind of come out and say he did. And the only one in the grand scheme of things that ever told the truth was the guy who just took the biggest dive in history, Jose Canseco.
Right. Well, he's the one who blew the lid off.
Right.
The whole scandal. By the way, he took a dive in a boxing match, by the way, for like $1 million.
It does go to show you that, I mean, there is forgiveness. But for, you know, for a player like, you know, when the whole thing went down, Clemens came right out and was adamant and just was like, you know, "Oh, woe is me and I'm the victim."
Right.
You know, no one forgot that.
But see, that's okay. That's fine. But look where he is. And like Schilling, what he's done has nothing to do with baseball. And I don't think he's like a first ballot Hall of Fame guy anyway, because he doesn't have the numbers, but he has the postseason performance.
Definitely has the postseason. But honestly, though, what does it really mean to any of these players if they don't make the Hall of Fame? That's what it means to them. That's their legacy.
Right. And the older they get, the more it matters to them. And that's why some of this false sincerity comes back into play. And I don't know. You know where I stand on the steroid era. I'm used, most baseball people think, who cares about the steroids? They all did it. These guys are great players anyway. Let them all in. Schilling, I think it's his own issue. Like, I don't care if he believes in who politically he believes. That's not the point. Like, I don't care what his political beliefs are. He could be as pro-Trump as whatever, and I would embrace him in the Hall of Fame. I just think he's handling it in a way that just doesn't work for people.
Is he just saying this because he knows he's like, you know, screw, I know I'm not getting in, so I might as well just be preemptive and be like, you know what, leave me off.
If he did the charm offensive, kept his politics to a more moderate level, I think he would have had a fighting chance. But I think he's going to stay on the ballot, and I don't think he's going to get in. But maybe 20 years when he's, you know, he's old and decrepit, they'll get him on
the
Veterans
Committee.
That was
my next question for guys like him and Bonds and Clemens. You know, they only have one more year. So
they'll get in someday.
Will they get in someday?
Yeah, I do think
so. Do you think, I mean, eventually I feel like the Hall of Fame's going to get revamped as far as the voting process.
They got to change
it. If people whine long enough, eventually something will get done.
I mean, you have to at some point change. I mean, I don't know. I didn't like putting a guy on second base in extra innings, but it looks like that's going to be here to stay too. So, I mean, yeah, they'll have to adapt it. But this whole consistency of errors and consistency of statistics is a bit of a problem. But I think ultimately, once people feel like Bonds and Clemens have suffered enough and haven't been able, I think for Clemens, like the fact that he can't financially capitalize on being a Hall of Famer,
right.
I think eventually it'll sort of take its toll to say he paid his debt to society. I'm sure he'll do some sort of mea culpa, and then the Veterans Committee will let him in.
I mean, the one thing that these guys have going for them over like a Pete Rose is they made a ton of money while they were playing.
Right.
Pete Rose didn't make a lot of money while he was playing.
Like Clemens and Bonds don't need money.
And Pete Rose probably gambled a lot of his money away.
Right.
You know, those guys, these guys don't need the money.
That is true.
It means more to them to see their name on there and for the next 100 years or 50 years or whatever after they're dead for people to see that.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame conversation is getting a little silly for me. I just think that the Schilling thing, he just made it too much about
him.
He's
a dope.
And I'd rather move on. All right, John Senecal, Brian Chapkin, fan base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's talk about this trade between the Yankees and the Red Sox, because you did a bit of a deep dive.
It doesn't happen often.
Yeah, so give us a couple nuggets on the history of these trades.
Well, we all know the most famous one. It really wasn't a trade. It was a sale, and that was Red Sox-Yankees, 1919 Babe Ruth. So, but other than that, I mean, there is not a lot to talk about. As far as names-wise, we have 2014, the Yankees got Steven Drew, and they gave up Kelly Johnson. Okay?
That's a nobody deal.
The biggest Steven Drew, the biggest claim to fame is his brother's JD.
1918, not 19. 19 was the Black Sox.
Right? No, they got him in 1919.
They sold him in 1919?
Yeah. Remember the Red Sox won their last World Series in 1918?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You're right.
So, not last one, but you know.
The one that before the curse of the Bambino.
The one everyone hung on to forever.
For so long.
So then before 2014, that was Steven Drew and Kelly Johnson. Before 2014, we got 1997, which was Randy Braun and Mike Stanley to the Yankees for Tony Armas Jr. and Jim Mercer.
Mike Stanley. But Mike Stanley, who got Stanley?
Yankees got Stanley.
Yeah, and he played for a while.
But I mean, nothing like, you know, nothing really to write home about.
No batting gloves. That's what stands out. He didn't wear batting gloves.
94, Yankees get Scott Bankhead, and they send cash to the Red Sox.
Nothing
like cash and Babe Ruth.
Bankhead was a decent pitcher.
Didn't pan out like the cash for Babe Ruth. No. 86, Yankees get Mike Easler for Don Baylor.
That's a big deal.
Right.
And because Baylor, I loved.
I wonder how many times he got hit by a pitch for the Red Sox.
A lot. Well, he was the all-time leader.
So
and
that
hit
was
by
86,
pitch.
Though. So Baylor was
two guys I liked, and Easler came back to the Red Sox later as a hitting coach too.
I wonder what part of the career Baylor was at there.
Late. Oh, he was late.
So that's
late
not
stage.
Such a great deal for the Red Sox. Baylor, great player, but not such a great deal because he's toward the back end of his
I think
career.
He was there to fill out the 25 man. I don't think he was there to start, but he was definitely like a positive presence. You know, they didn't win the World Series, obviously. We all know what happened, but I think he was more positive than negative when it came to contributing to that team.
Much bigger name than Steven Drew, Kelly Johnson.
Yeah, that's a bit. I didn't know that. I forgot about that trade. I didn't know about that.
It might not be cash, depending on how much cash there is.
That trade in 1983 or 2 would have been a bigger deal. But still, that's two big names.
And then we got, this is probably the most interesting one, is 1972. The Yankees get Sparky Lyle at the age of 27.
Oh, young Sparky
From the
Lyle.
Red Sox for Danny Cater and Mario Guerrero.
Now, you wonder back then, before you get to the last trade, if the rivalry was such that they were still rivals in the American League, but like if it was sort
really
of taboo,
start to spark off.
Was it taboo to make a trade? Like now you don't make a trade in the division, they say. That's why the trade, was it Ottavino? What's the guy's name again?
Adam Ottavino.
Yeah, that was kind of a big deal to me because they probably could have dumped him somewhere else. And it's just, you don't really, unless you have to, make a trade in your division. Whether it's not just the Red Sox, Yankees, you don't want to trade him to Tampa. You don't even want to trade him to Baltimore.
Right. Well, then also you think about this. So he goes on to play for 7 years with the Yankees. And that takes you into 77, 78, 79. Right. And there could be a lot of resentment from Red Sox still, you know, knowing that he's coming back to bite him. And he goes on to win two World Series with the Yankees and three All-Stars.
Wow.
Sparky Lyle. So that's a good trade for the Yankees. And then 67, Rom Klimblowski for the Yankees. Yeah, a couple. Then there's Elson Howard, I'm guessing, on towards the back end of his career, too, goes to the Red Sox.
And so that's nothing, pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. And it was Red Ruffing back in 1930, but nothing, you know, it's not. Other than that, Sparky Lyle, a little bit of Don Baylor, and then the big one.
So why do you think Cashman did it? Do you think he just wanted, the best deal was from the Red Sox and he just took it? Doesn't see the Red Sox as a threat?
That was just a weird thing. It's like, I don't know. I think it was just more of like a dump. He just got rid of him.
Because the Red Sox, most people are really constructive on him coming to the Red Sox. Like, he's going to be a good depth guy.
He was the it guy when the Yankees got him as a free agent from Colorado. And then he was great for the first year with the Yankees. Then his slider went flat. He's a one-pitcher guy. And when that slider goes flat, you're toast.
Right. So you don't think he's got anything left?
I mean, who knows? It's a whole season, you know? I mean, he could be... How many times have you seen Major League Baseball players flip the switch in one season? It happens all the time, especially with pitchers.
And especially in contract years.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right, listen, we appreciate the time here on Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman.
Check us out on iHeartRadio.
Yep.
YouTube, which you're watching right now.
With the mustache, of course. And then Spotify and Apple, wherever you're enjoying your podcast right now. We will be back very soon.